walk alone. Step by step,
step by
day, I'm on the road to recovery, trusting God along the way, trusting God along the way, trusting God all the way.
We could all make our way to our seats. We're about to get started. How's everybody doing tonight? Good. We're starting these off with a joke now, so if you don't like it, laugh anyway. So two drunks are driving home from a bar, and they're drinking on the way home, and they get pulled over by a cop. And the drunk that's driving chugs the rest of his beer, throws the bottle in the seat, rips off the label, and sticks it on his forehead. And his buddy looks at him, and he's like, what are you, crazy? What are you doing? And he says, just follow my lead. So his buddy does the same. And the cop walks up to his window. He says, evening, have you boys been drinking tonight? And he says, no, officer, we're alcoholics, and we're on the patch. Thank you. All right. With that, welcome to the Fort Lauderdale Primary Purpose Big Book Study Group's Thursday night Alcoholics and God Speaker Step Series. I'm a recovered alcoholic. My name is Zach. Thanks for joining us tonight. In a minute, we're going to start our two-minute meditation, so take a moment to get situated. We ask you please turn off or silence all devices that will make noise or might distract others. And we're just going to take this next couple minutes to let the craziness of the day drift away and get our focus back and get our connection with God clear so that we can focus on our speaker in a few minutes here. So if everyone is ready, let's turn down the lights and start the meditation. Now we're going to say the fog light prayer. If you don't know it, just repeat after me. God, let your love shine through me like a fog light, so those who are lost, sick, and dying can find your love through me. Amen. From There's a Solution in the Big Book, page 17, the tremendous fact for every one of us is that we have discovered a common solution. We have a way out on which we can absolutely agree and upon which we can join in brotherly and harmonious action. This is the great news this book carries to those who suffer from alcoholism. So, the purpose of being in a 12-step fellowship is to work the 12 steps. The purpose of the 12 steps is to have a spiritual experience. And for that reason, we read spiritual experience at this meeting because we think it's kind of important that we know what one is. And I have asked Nate to read spiritual experience. Please help me welcome him.
Hi, my name is Nate, and I'm an alcoholic. Hey, Nate. The term spiritual experience and spiritual awakening are used many times in this book, which upon careful reading shows that the personality change sufficient to bring about recovery from alcoholism has manifested itself among us in many different forms. Yet it is true that our first printing gave many readers the impression that these personality changes or religious experiences must be in the nature of sudden and spectacular upheavals. Happily for everyone, this conclusion is erroneous. In the first few chapters, a number of sudden revolutionary changes are described. Through it was not our intention to create such an impression. Many alcoholics have nevertheless concluded that in order to recover, they must acquire an immediate and overwhelming God consciousness, followed at once by a vast change in feeling and outlook. Among our rapidly growing membership of thousands of alcoholics, such transformations, though frequent, are by no means the rule. Most of our experiences are what the psychologist William James calls the educational variety, because they develop slowly over a period of time. Quite often, friends of the newcomer are aware of the difference long before he himself. He finally realizes that he has undergone a profound alteration in his reaction to life, that such a change could hardly have been brought about by himself alone. What often takes place in a few months could seldom have been accomplished by years of self-discipline. With few exceptions, our members find that they have tapped an unsuspected inner resource which they presently identify with their own conception of a power greater than themselves. Most of us think this awareness of a power greater than ourselves is the essence of spiritual experience. Our more religious members call it God consciousness. Most emphatically, we wish to say that an alcoholic capable of honestly facing his problems in the light of our experience can recover, provided he does not close his mind to all spiritual concepts. He can only be defeated by an attitude of intolerance or belligerent denial. We find that no one need have difficulty with the spirituality of this program. Willingness, honesty, and open-mindedness are the essentials of recovery, but these are indispensable. There is a principle which is a bar against all information, which is proof against all arguments, and which cannot fail to keep a man in everlasting ignorance. That principle is contempt prior to investigation. Herbert Spencer.
Thank you, Nate. All right. Please refrain from disturbing others by talking or constantly getting up and sitting back down during the meeting. This is a tech-free meeting, so please set your phones to airplane mode, silent, or just turn it off. If you need to take a call, we have a lovely lobby area out there. And so this is Joe's 10th week, I believe. And so far, it's just been incredible listening to his experience with the steps. And Joe is just a completely genuine person every time he talks, and he clearly has a strong relationship with God. So to tell us how he maintains or grows in that relationship, please help me welcome Joe.
Jaxter? Thank you. Thanks, everybody. I'm an alcoholic. My name's Joe. I'm kind of hoping. I mean, this is no dig, but I mean, I'm hoping this is my 11th week, isn't it? Mike, where are you?
Yeah, one more week. Right. So I'm in my 11th week. Okay. I thought my addition was right. I'm just going to take a couple deep breaths here. There's a reason I do that. I do that often. It was explained to me that when I get jammed up or I need to just relax and get centered and get focused, I need to just breathe. You know what I mean? A lot of times I forget to breathe. And it's very therapeutic. It's very valuable for those of us that go through this thing to learn how to meditate and pray. We're in our 11th step, and some amazing things have happened. If that's where you're at, if you're not, trust me, it gets better. It gets fantastic. But it all begins with step one, right? It all begins with finding out why I can't stop when I start and really concede to my innermost self and come to the conclusion that I'm an alcoholic and can't manage my life, can't manage my thinking, and know exactly what that means. To understand not just what I am, not just identify because other people identify or identify because of the consequences that I suffered, but to identify because I truly believe in my innermost heart that I am truly an alcoholic, that I have the disease of addiction when it comes to alcohol or any other substance. And know that when I put it in, I can't stop. Or at best, I can't control the amount I take. I mean, I've got to know that crystal clear. Less, why would I even want to think about a solution to that problem if I don't think I have the problem, right? So I'm really not going to take a sincere position about seeking a spiritual solution, especially a spiritual solution to my dilemma, to my malady, to my sickness, if I don't believe I have it in the first place, or I don't think I have it to the degree where I'm going to be able to overcome, in my mind, I think I'm going to be able to overcome it in my own way, right? And we all go through what we go through. I don't know about any of you all, but I had suffered from untreated alcoholism for 16 years. In and out of this program, constantly thinking that I was going to be able to overcome it, constantly wishing beyond hope that I truly wasn't an alcoholic. I mean, that's what it really came down to the core for me, was to really, really, I didn't want to be one of you. I didn't want to have this thing. You know, as a kid, I didn't want to be an alcoholic. None of us do. And when I found out that this was what I suffered from, I fought it, man. I really, really fought it. And as long as I continued that fight, I was never going to be in line with what this book said or what you were saying or what the things on the window shade said or any of that stuff. I was going to fight until I was finally beaten so many times where I had to concede to my innermost self that I was truly an alcoholic. But I didn't even know what that meant. But I knew I was beaten. I knew I couldn't put it in my body successfully. And the worst part about that was all the times that I was able to stop and be separated for just a little bit. What just killed me was the fact that I wanted to stay stopped. And I know all of us do. All of us sitting here really want to stay stopped. But for some reason, I wasn't able to do that. And I didn't know until I got into this deal, right? So, I mean, that's what we really have to concede. We have to get to that ABC thing, you know, what that talks about and how it works. A, that we're alcoholic, couldn't manage our own life. It says in the preceding chapters, you see, they tell us right up front, this is a textbook. It's a book of instruction. We get those in school, right? We get those things. We want to pass algebra, we got to study an algebra book. If we want to pass chemistry, we got to study a chemistry book and study anatomy. We got to study it and memorize and learn it and master the information so that we can pass the exams, right? This is kind of like the same thing, right? So, you know, I can hear. See, I always equated my alcoholism always to what happened to me after I drank. I always looked at the consequences and compared them to your consequences and said, and heard you say, well, I'm an alcoholic. And so, you know, naturally I'm going to say, well, I'm an alcoholic based on what happens to me after I drink. And do you know that this book has nothing in here about that? This book tells me about my powerlessness, stone cold sober, undrunk. Tells me my condition, what my condition is, undrunk, undrugged, and why I'm powerless over it, right? So I come to the conclusion that I'm truly an alcoholic and can't manage my own life based on the preceding chapters of the doctor's opinion. I see it through Bill's story. I see the progression of alcoholism and powerlessness in Bill through his story. I really come to understand why I haven't been able to stay stopped through There Is a Solution. And then Bill writes a whole chapter on why I can't put it in and control it. So all the information is in there to come to the two conclusions they're talking about. A, that I'm alcoholic and couldn't manage my own life. And B, that probably no human power could have relieved me of my alcoholism or could keep me stopped. See, not being able to be relieved of my alcoholism simply means that I can't stay stopped. I continue to start again, right? So having said that, in here, in We Agnostics, which is a chapter 4, which really dives into my belief system. And how I think about God and how I think about a higher power, my whole conception of it. You know, I believe that the call to step 2 came to believe in a power greater than myself. I believe that the call is not for me to design and create my own God. God is God. He is what he is, right? But the call is that whatever conception I have been introduced to, whatever my understanding is, whatever my concept is, whatever my education is, my knowledge of it, it's going to challenge that. It's going to see if it's sufficient for me to move on with. And typically it's not. All right? It's not saying that it's not calling me or asking me to change the God of my understanding or my conception. But what it's asking me to do is to really challenge how I hold him or my understanding, my relationship, whether good or bad, right? Well, if I can get here without my book falling apart, let's see here. Bear with me. No pun intended. It's, you know, I should have brought my other book, but it's all right. I'll get to it. Did anybody else go through that traffic tonight besides me? Coming from the north? Oh, I left an hour early, and I was still late. Not good. Great night for step 11, though. No, really, it is. It kept me emotionally balanced, thinking about him. Bear with me. I'm getting there. You got another book? Oh, you're the man. Thank you. I got to find it in here. Okay. I'm sorry, it's in How It Works. It says this. This is a how and why of it. Well, it says this. So our troubles, we think, are basically of our own making. They arise out of ourselves, and the alcoholic is an extreme example of self-will run riot, though he usually doesn't think so. Above everything, we alcoholics must be rid of this selfishness. We muster, it kills us. Right? God makes that possible. We've stopped calling him higher power. We call him by name God in this book, okay? I have no problem with that. And by the way, let me just say, this is my experience. What I discuss with you tonight and what I convey to you out of the book is what's out of the book. But my experience is what I convey to you about my transition through this thing. What happened to me, okay? And the position I take. So, you know, it is what it is, all right? I call him God. And there often seems no way of entirely getting rid of self without his aid. Many of us had moral and philosophical convictions galore, but we could not live up to them even though we would have liked to. Neither could we reduce our self-centeredness much by wishing or trying on our own power. We had to have God's help, right? If I search my soul and I really look at the truth, I'm establishing some truth here, that this is absolutely true for me in my life. I can't deny this anymore, right? If I was to deny what I'm trying to have them have me understand, I'm probably going to drink again if I continue to deny it and push it away and argue it and defy it. That's just for me. That's what's going to happen to me, and I don't want to drink again. I don't want to go to the pavement again. I don't want to face that death again, right? It says, this is how and why, but first of all, we had to quit playing God. It didn't work. Next, we decided that hereafter in this drama of life, God was going to be our director. See, I am at step three here. I'm making a decision to seek the solution that they've laid out. I've tried every single solution that I thought was going to work for me. And it didn't work for me. It just didn't work for me. I kept drinking. Right? The proof's in the pudding. It says, when I'm making this decision to turn my will, which is my thoughts, and my life, which is my actions, over to God's care, which I believe is this program, right? Then this is how that looks. This is how that translates. Next, we decided that hereafter in astronomy, like God was going to be my director. He's the principal, I'm his agent. He's the father, and I'm his child. Most good ideas are simple. And this concept was the keystone of the new and triumphant arch through which we passed to freedom. I wanted freedom. I wanted to be free. I was so burdened when I got here. The past was crippling me. The fear of the future was stifling me. I wanted to be free. I wanted to be okay with who I was, right? And here's what it says. It says, when I sincerely take that position, all sorts of remarkable things were to follow, okay? We're step 11 tonight. We had a new employer. Being all powerful, he provided what we needed. If we kept close to him through prayer, meditation, conversation, you know, seeking, right? And performed his work well, helped other people. Established on such a footing, we became less and less interested in ourselves, our little plans and designs. More and more, we became interested in seeing what we could contribute to life. As we felt new power flow in, as we enjoyed peace of mind, as we discovered we could face life successfully, as we became conscious of his presence, we begin to lose our fear of today, tomorrow, or the hereafter. We were reborn. This is what happens. But it demands I do some things in order to have that happen. They talk about, at this stage of the game, that I have created a clear channel because it was choked off. It says that I had become choked off from the sunlight of the Spirit, from the grace, from the connection from him. The channel was closed, and it was closed not because of what he didn't close it. I closed it. I closed it through greed, through envy, through pride, through lust, through demanding of other things, through entitlement, through selfishness, self-centeredness, ego, pride, defensiveness, all that stuff. I had closed it off. I had choked it off. Not just because of that, but because of my addiction to the world, because of my addiction to stuff, material things, right? Money, pride, prestige, fame, glory, applause, recognition, the whole nine. I was so consumed with that, there was no connection. There was nothing coming through that channel. And that's not how I believe he designed it to be. I had become selfish and self-centered to the extreme, where the only thing that mattered was me getting what I wanted. And it didn't matter if I hurt you in the pursuit. It didn't. I could apologize later. There was nothing really good happening with me at that point. And I was suffering. That's what happened, right? And through that worldly pursuit that I had, I didn't even understand it, but I knew this, that I was suffering consequences internally. The remorse was terrible. The regret was unbelievable. It didn't go anywhere. It was always there. It was following me around like a demon. What I did to people, I hurt them. I felt extremely lonely. Nobody knows loneliness like alcoholics when they get here. Nobody. I had an incredible fear of the future. I had a lot of criminal things going on. I had a lot of things pending in my life. Everything came crashing down, right? So I had developed this internal condition. And because I wanted you to like me so desperately, I pretended that none of it was real. That is a heck of a place to get to, right? So what was my solution? Well, they're giving me that solution. If you're anywhere close to being in that state, I'm talking to you. Because once we make the decision, we're going to investigate all that stuff. And we're going to start to clear out this channel. We're going to start to take care of all the things that have been haunting us and have been blocking us off. So I do the inventory. I address my fears. I address my resentments. I address my harms to other people. And I look at all the things that I did, fueled by my defects of character, that had me become the loneliest man on the planet. Selfish and self-centered to the extreme, to the core, right? I confess that to another man. And all of a sudden, a tremendous load falls off. Let me read to you. The first personality change in this program comes really through step four. When I get here, I'm blaming everybody for my stuff. Everybody. I'm a victim to the extreme. It's not my fault. I'm not going to take accountability for that. And through this four-step inventory, I start to see where I set everything in motion. Most things. And if I was truly a victim as a child, I set things in motion from that point forward that were not healthy. I held people hostage to their emotions, to their pocketbooks. I was making sure that they would suffer as a result of what they did to me. And that started very early and continued on, right? So all the while, I am getting further and further away from what my intended purpose was in being created in the first place. But all of a sudden, now through this inventory, through this investigation, I'm able to see where I'm the one that set it all in motion, or most of it. And they say this, that when you're able to do that, you stop blaming other people. You stop being the victim, and you start taking accountability for your own actions. Because see, you can change your own actions. You can commit to change your own actions. But if you're holding other people responsible for things that you set in motion, they own you. You get to be right about them being wrong, but you'll always be crippled by it. All right? So what it says here, it says, if we have been thorough about our personal inventory, we have written down a lot. We have listed and analyzed our resentments. We have begun to comprehend their futility and their fatality. We have commenced to see the terrible destructiveness. We have begun to learn tolerance, patience, and goodwill toward all men. I didn't have that when I got here. That was a profound shift in my psyche, in my whole come from. It was a profound shift for me to have, for me to forgive you for blaming you. It was almost like I've been blaming you for the very thing that I was responsible for. And when I'm able to see my part, I take that blame off you and I take accountability for the wrong. And all of a sudden, my whole view changes of that relationship. It just changes. It says, we have begun to learn tolerance, patience, and goodwill toward all men, even our enemies, for we look on them as sick people. We have listened to the people we have hurt by our conduct and are willing to straighten out the past if we can. So all of a sudden, they're already leading me towards what's next. Right? That I'm going to be making amends to these people for holding them in contempt and in responsible for all the damage that I really needed to be responsible for. That's a profound shift in my personality, in my whole understanding. All right? And then they say through the fifth step, we start to have this spiritual experience. So this experience spiritually that all of a sudden I'm like on a track. I mean, for me, it was like I'm on a track that's going somewhere. I'm doing something that I had never done. I'm actually contributing to the betterment of Joe Bear. I'm contributing to the betterment of my own life. I'm contributing to the what's possible as far as relationships with the people that I had become alienated from. And I'm also fitting myself. I'm doing the work necessary. This is like huge. I had never felt this before, that I'm actually really sincerely and earnestly trying to develop this relationship with my Creator. I'm trying to become a better man. Wow, that's not what I had envisioned about not drinking and drugging. I didn't understand that part was going to come. I didn't know I was going to be able to have emotions and feelings that were positive as a result of looking within. Right? So it says this, as I said before. When we sincerely took such a position, all sorts of remarkable things followed. We had a new employer, being all powerful. All of a sudden I look upon him as not just my father, not just an instrument for him, but as my boss, right? If I take that kind of a position, I'm more of someone that's going to look to him for instruction, look to him for counsel. So I do this inventory. I do this confession. All of a sudden, all the things that I had been harboring are dispelled. They go from the inside to the outside. They're no longer lingering within and rotting me from the inside out, right? I get in this program of change. I become willing to have him remove these defects through my participation in not repeating that behavior, but conducting myself in a way that is completely opposite of the way I had conducted myself. So where I was a habitual liar, I start telling the truth. Whereas I was a thief, I stop stealing. Where I was insincere, I start telling the truth to people. I start letting them know how I truly feel. All these things were a development in me becoming an authentic man. In having the opportunity present itself where who you see is truly me. And not the fraud. Not the masquerade that's been conducting himself trying to make you like him. And something happens in this process where you start to really put your value in him, in how you're conducting yourself, rather than in human response. I stop living. If I'm doing the right thing and if I'm conducting myself in an appropriate manner and being decent to my fellow man, then automatically you're not going to be offended by that. I'm going to be doing his will. And the only way I can do his will is with you as the vehicle. I can't do it in the closet. So you are the instrument for me to show him how sincere I am about how much I want to be in relationship with him. Does y'all get that? I can pray, I can meditate, I can think I'm doing that, but if I'm not being kind and considerate and helpful to you and giving of myself to you and selfless as best as I can, right? Not going to be all the time. But that's an expression of my love for him. My love for you is the expression to him, right? And all sorts of remarkable things follow. They just do, right? Life's not going to get like a bowl of cherries. We're going to have our ups and downs. We're going to have those hour-long drives on a 15-minute, you know, ride. You know what I mean? It's like, it should take me no more than 20 minutes to get here. But through that, I'm not like cussing out this one and cussing out that one and screaming on this one and screaming on that one. Now, I do that occasionally. I do. You know, we're all human. But then I look in the mirror and I'm like, what are you, idiot? What are you doing? Right? I'm getting emotionally upset for absolutely no reason at all. So here we are. So we incorporate this design. I'm constantly checking myself. I'm taking inventory. I'm thinking about where I'm parked, what I'm chasing. You know the appetites and the desires. And you know, I'm talking to people all day long in recovery, and not all day long, but a lot of times. And committing to change when I act out poorly, and asking God for help, and making amends where necessary. And all of a sudden, I start to get this emotional state where I'm not too high, I'm not too low. I'm not depressed anymore, I'm not lonely anymore. I'm not in anxiety anymore. My fear lessens substantially. My worry diminishes very much. I can enjoy being mindless in any moment. I can just say, I'm not going to think about nothing right now. I'm going to sit in my lazy boy with my two dogs and just relax and think about nothing. That's amazing. I never could do that. Ever, ever. Right? So now they say there's some techniques. Now that I've gotten some of the best promises that there are, right? Read a few of them to you. I don't know how you felt when you got here, but this is not how I felt when I got here. So, by the way, you know, we covered this last week in step 10, and it says, we've entered the world of the Spirit. I've got something here that I'm going to read to you in a moment that kind of describes that. Our next function is to grow in understanding and effectiveness. So, you know, faith without works is dead. I don't want to get to a plateau and say, I've got it, right? I know what happens when you do that. I want to continue to grow. That's how we're designed. It says, this is not an overnight matter. It should continue for a lifetime. Continue to watch for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. We initially did that in step 4. We identified all those things in the 4th step. When these crop up, we ask God at once to remove them. We did that in 6 and 7, right? We discuss them with somebody immediately. We did that in 5. And we make amends quickly if we've harmed anybody. We do that in 8 and 9, right? Then we resolutely turn our thoughts to someone we can help. Love and tolerance is our code. We do that in 12. Right? It says, this is what happens. So just so everybody knows, when step 12 says, having had a spiritual awakening, the awakening has occurred. By the time I get done with 9, or not done with 9, but at least it well into the depth, into the midst of 9, and I'm in that pursuit of making amends, recovery has happened. I no longer suffer from a hopeless state of mind and body. When the thought comes up to get a sense of ease and comfort through something stupid like booze or drugs, my mind goes to exactly what it did to me rather than what it did for me, and I recoil from it from a hot flame. You'll know that when you get to it. But that's exactly what happens, all right? So recovery has happened. We've had this awakening of the Spirit. We've cleared the channel. We start to have the ability to communicate and conversate with God in a way that is just so warming and so loving and so protective. It's relationship. It's just like relationship you have with anybody that's endearing and loving, all right? And it's a relationship that we must work on, right? So it says, and we have ceased fighting anything or anyone, even alcohol. For this time, sanity will have returned. Soundness of mind. Being okay with what is. That's sanity, right? It says, we'll seldom be interested in liquor. If tempted, we recoil from it as from a hot flame. You just don't think about drinking anymore. You just don't. Booze is there. You see it all over the place on billboards and this and that and the other. But you don't think about drinking it. You don't think about putting it down your throat. The problem's been removed, right? It says we react sanely and normally most of the time. And we will find that this has happened automatically. We will see that our new attitude towards liquor has been given us without any thought or effort on our part. My sponsor always took issue with that. He says, well, you've done a lot of work. It says it just comes. That is the miracle of it. We're not fighting it, neither are we avoiding temptation. We feel as though we have been placed in a position of neutrality, safe and protected. Safe and protected. These are miracles for people like us. This is like Spanglish. When you come into this program and you talk about this, this is why sometimes I have issue with them reading the promises in the beginning of a meeting, because people that are coming in that are just, you know, dying, hear that, they go, how in God's name is that supposed to happen? Like, am I supposed to feel like that now that I'm in a room of AA? I mean, that's how I used to feel. Instead, the problem has been removed. It doesn't exist for us. We're neither cocky nor we're afraid. You will not find anybody that's experienced this that takes credit for any of it. They always give the credit to him. Always. At least the people I know. That is our experience. That is how we react as long as we keep in fit spiritual condition. How do I keep in fit spiritual condition? I talked about this last week. Well, I take inventory. I talk to somebody about it. I commit to change, I ask God for help, and I make amends when necessary. That's how. That's how I will remain on the beam and be in emotional balance. Okay? If I'm not doing any of that design, which has been, you know, incorporated in me, then I'm going to suffer from it. I'm just going to suffer. Listen, I've always said you can do anything you want to do as long as you're willing to pay the price. Right? So we get to 11, and it gives us some real important information here about what to do in the morning and what to do at night and what to do during the day. All right. Step 10 is about inventory. We can take inventory right away. We can take it at night. We can go away for the occasional retreat, but we're always taking inventory. We're always looking within. We can't awaken spiritually unless we go inside. Carl Jung said it. He says, those that look outside dream. Those that look inside awaken, right? That's how it works. It says it works if we have the proper attitude. Well, we've been working since step 3 to have the proper attitude. It says these are some valuable suggestions. When we retire at night, we constructively review our day. I believe they put night first so that when we wake up, we're not waking up into an emotional hangover. We're not waking up into undone business that should have been handled the day before. We're not waking up angry, nervous, agitated, or the like, because we handle it this way, right? So it says when we retire at night, we constructively review our day. Were we resentful, selfish, dishonest, or afraid? Step 4. Do we owe an apology? 8 and 9. Have we kept something to ourselves which should be discussed with someone at once? Step 5. Were we kind and loving toward all? What could we have done better? Were we thinking of ourselves most of the time? Or were we thinking of what we could do for others? Of what we could pack into the stream of light? What we could contribute, right? But we must be careful not to drift into worry, remorse, morbid reflection, for that would diminish our usefulness to others. After remaking our review, we ask God's forgiveness and inquire what corrective measures should be taken. 6 and 7. Right? It's the design. They're asking us to incorporate the design, this new design. Then it says, on awakening, let us think about the 24 hours ahead. So now he's telling us to view the movie of what we're going to be in that day, right? We constructively review our day. We consider our plans for the day. We envision our day. Constructive imagination. I know who I'm going to meet with. I know who I'm going to see. I know who I'm going to interact with most of the time. Yeah, there will be those incidental contacts. But I prepare myself for them as well, right? So who am I going to interact with in a way that's much better today than the way I've been with them? Maybe I've been short with them. Maybe I've isolated from them. Maybe I've treated them badly. Maybe I've gossiped about them. Today, I'm not going to do that. This is how we envision being with people, right? And in a positive way. Because I'm going to tell you something. When you prepare in the morning for an effective, successful day, you will do much better in that day, just like the New England Patriots, who I can't stand, win Super Bowls. They don't do it just mindlessly going out there and practicing. They envision every day what they're going to do effectively, right? When any successful team, any successful person has a strategy for success, this is ours, okay? So it says, upon awakening, we look at the 24 hours ahead. We consider our plans for the day. Before we begin, we ask God to direct our thinking. This is step three, people. This is how we turn our will and our life over to the care of God. I like to say I suffer from untreated alcoholism every morning when I open my eyes. How do I treat it? I do a step three. I bring him into the fold. I bring him in to counsel to do this thing, right? To be successful. It says, especially asking that it be divorced from self-pity, dishonest, or self-seeking motives. Under these conditions, we can employ our mental faculties with assurance. For after all, God gave us brains to use. This is a right way to use our brain in the morning. I don't know about anybody else, but when I get up, my brain is in conflict. It just is. I'm pretty negative when I get up. I'm trying to get awake. I got to feed the dogs. I got to brush my teeth. There's stuff I got to do. If I don't effectively set my day up, here's how it goes. I wake up late. I don't feed the dogs. I say, I'll feed them later. I don't make the coffee, right? I turn on Channel 7 News and watch all the carnage and horrific crap that's going on in the world today. And I'm really getting primed, right? I walk out the door and I slam the door and I go, who's going to offend me today? Do you have any idea how close that is to drinking? I'm looking for a fight. That's my condition. That's my default. So I have to do this in order. And listen, you get ingrained in this and you get habitual about this. You wouldn't even think about going out of the house without it. For us to drink is to die. For me to drink is to die. All right? It says this. Our thought life will be placed on a much higher plane when our thinking is cleared of wrong motives. Wow. In thinking about our day, we may face indecision. We may not be able to determine what course to take. Here, we ask God for inspiration, an intuitive thought or decision. We bring him in. We invite him in, right? We relax and take it easy. We don't struggle. When I try to force things to happen, just like anybody, they go really, really bad, right? If I just relax and take it easy, pause, take some deep breaths, get some of that frustration out of me, and invite God in, God, your will be done. I know you got my back. You've had it since the beginning. That's the evidence, right? That's the evidence. He's had it since the beginning. When I look back, my life has been far greater than anything I could have imagined. So why would I start doubting him now, right? So I know if I do this, it works. It says we relax and take it. We don't struggle. We are often surprised how the right answers come after we've tried this for a while, right? Aren't we? Absolutely. We absolutely know he's doing for us what we could never do for ourselves. This is really something. It says what used to be the hunch or the occasional inspiration gradually becomes a working part of the mind. It becomes habit, right? Being still inexperienced and having just made conscious contact with God, it is not probable that we're going to be inspired at all times. We might pay for this presumption in all sorts of absurd actions and ideas. Man, God, lock my keys in my car. No, you idiot. You locked your keys in your car because you were in a hurry and you were thinking about something else. Really? Lock my keys? God doesn't do that. He doesn't lock me out of my house. I do that. We got to be careful when we talk and we blurt out stuff. Because upon honest appraisal, I'm the cause of all my problems. I don't believe God tests me in any way. But I believe he's always there to carry me through whatever trial I'm going through. Without fail. I know that because that's the evidence. That's the truth of my life. That's the experience of my life, right? It says we usually conclude the period of meditation. Now, this thing about meditation, I'm going to do this quick because... Did we start late? Okay. I'm going to do this quick because I know you all want to go home. Meditation is not what a lot of people think it is. A lot of people think meditation is closing your eyes and listening for some kind of voice. It's not. I'm going to read this to you, and I hope this has some value for you. Meditation is the art of preparing myself, my mind, body, and soul for message. For a message. If you're hearing audible messages, I don't know about that. But I know I hear message. The intuitive thought or decision, the communication, the things that pop into my head that come from nowhere. I mean, well, I know where they come from, right? Especially like if you're going to be doing something really important, somehow God gives us that way to that how we're supposed to conduct ourselves. You know, Lord, speak through me so that I can say the right things when I have this encounter. And miraculously, I'll walk away from the encounter and go, where did that come from? Right? Says meditation refers to a family of self-regulation practices that focus on training, attention, and awareness in order to bring mental processes under greater voluntary control and thereby foster general mental well-being and development. All right? It is used to describe practices that self-regulate the body and the mind. It's me quieting down. It's me doing very intentional exercises to relieve my body and my mind and my soul of stress or conversations that are pushing in to just simply clear away the gobbledygook that's going on in my mind and put my body in a relaxation mode, right? I'm going to be able to hear message much better like that if I want to intentionally focus on my health. I do the same thing. If I want to intentionally focus on like going on a sailboat and go sailing in the ocean, I can do that without any of the other clutter coming in. All right. So there are techniques. There's music. There's wonderful meditative music. Water on a tin roof. Nooks, you know, streams, forest sounds, birds chirping, things that you can listen to that are really valuable in getting into that meditative process. But it is the art of preparing yourself for the message. Now, prayer, on the other hand, is this. Prayer is the act that seeks to activate a rapport or relationship with God through deliberate, intentional, or purposeful communication. Okay? Prayer can be the form of religious practice. It may either be individual or communal. We do it with other people. We did it before we came in here, right? And can take place in public or private. It may involve the use of words or song. When language is used, prayer may take the form of a hymn, incantation, formal creed, or a spontaneous utterance in the praying person, conversation with God, right? There are different forms of prayer, such as petitionary prayer, a request, thanksgiving, worship, praise. Prayer may be for the purpose of worshiping, requesting guidance, requesting assistance, confessing sins, defects, right, shortcomings, or to express one's thoughts or emotions. Relationship. Intimate, authentic, personal, empowering relationships with our Creator. Because remember, we've done the work to create that open channel. And it's real. It is absolutely real. Matter of fact, it's the most real thing of my life, bar none. Okay? So, thus, people pray for many reasons, such as personal benefit or for the sake of others. My sponsor always told me, he says, listen, Joe, he says, you can pray for yourself as long as it's not only for your benefit, but the maximum benefit of other people. So if I'm praying for something for me, it must include being good for others. All right? The lottery hasn't worked for me, as you can see. All right? I tell them I'll help a lot of people. I'll give most of it away. Next week we'll talk about carrying the message. Thank you.
Let's get another round of applause for Joe. That was great. Thank you. And now we have our recovered alcoholic secretary, Fred. Please help me welcome him.
Hi, my name is Fred, and I'm your recovered alcoholic secretary. In keeping with the seven tradition, which states that every group shall be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions, the baskets are now going around. I've asked Jeff to read the recovered statement. We read this notice to explain why many people in this group identify as recovered rather than recovering and what it exactly means to be a recovered alcoholic.
Hi, I'm Jeff. I'm an alcoholic. Recovered. We are not cured of alcoholism. Recovered but not cured. That presents a conflict to some alcoholics. If we were cured, we would be able to drink responsibly. No, we are not cured. The allergic reaction to alcohol will remain with us for our lifetime. But we have been restored to sanity. That was the problem. The main problem of the alcoholic centers in his mind rather than in the body. We are now sane where alcohol is concerned. Consequently, we have recovered.
...1940-style Big Book sponsorship. From the forward to the second edition, Alcoholics Anonymous. Of alcoholics who came to AA and really tried, 50% got sobered at once and remained that way, 25% sobered up after some relapses, and among the remainder, those who stayed on with AA showed improvement. What we've seen, felt, and come to believe and experience is that God has not changed over time, and neither should the sacred approach back to his loving arms. The statistics above suggest a 75% success rate. Can I have a show of hands of recovered alcoholics? Is there anyone in need of a sponsor tonight? Please raise your hand. Please join us Monday nights. We have a Big Book study meeting on the third floor where the Big Book comes alive. Fellowship is at 6:30 and the meeting itself starts at 7:15. We have large print Big Book and Big Book dictionaries for sale. We meet every Thursday starting promptly at 7:15, and we ask that you be courteous and ready to begin at the sound of bells. Thank you, guys, and I'll see you next week.
Thank you, Fred. We have tonight's session and all other past podcasts for free to listen to at alcoholicsandgod.org. I would also like to invite everybody to our Monday night Big Book study, where the book comes alive. Awesome meeting. Check it out if you haven't. And those who wish to thank tonight's speaker, please line up down the center. Now let's take another brief moment of silence and close with the Lord's Prayer in our seats. Our Father,
who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name.
Godspeed.
I am desperately in need of restoration. Yeah, and I am ready for you to take me higher. Yeah, the only thing that I can do is I'm praying, 'cause on my own I just can't get it right. It doesn't matter how hard I try, but with you I become a much stronger man. Getting on my knees puts me back on my feet again. Load is heavy, too much accumulation. These possessions that I have amount to nothing at all. And I am willing to hand over every one of them, 'cause they won't profit me.
The whole smiles with you forever. Yes, when you laughing, when you're laughing, yes, the sun comes shining through. But when you're crying, you bring on the rain. So stop your sighing, baby, and be happy again. Yes, and keep on smiling. Keep on smiling, baby. And I hope
Bum, bum, bum.